Hi, I'm Trevor Cochran and welcome to The Garden Gurus Live. It's our weekly show where Joanne Harris and I share seasonal garden advice. We feature a variety of garden lovers from all over Australia and the world, and we give you the opportunity to interact and ask your garden questions. To join the chat live and ask your gardening questions, all you need to do is like The Garden Gurus Facebook page and tune in every week. This live stream is brought to you by Sunpalm, Troforte and Garden Express. Sunpalm Australia is a leading market-orientated, research and development-driven and progressive company specialising in producing and supplying a huge range of plastic and fertiliser products that cater to the needs of customers from the landscape, nursery, garden, forestry, agriculture and horticulture industries. Their mission is to transform your garden into a picturesque oasis. So head to sunpalmaustralia.com.au and learn more about them. Hello, welcome to the Garden Gurus Live. It's great to be back. I'm Trevor Cochran. It's been a bit of a break and we've all had some interesting challenges. At one point, it was all about floods, particularly obviously in northern eastern Australia and more recently in northern western Australia as well. But interestingly enough, everybody now, all my friends on the East Coast are telling me it's all about dry conditions. It has dried out and it's starting to get very warm. I believe right across the country today, it is quite warm, albeit for the first time in ages in Perth. There was a little bit of rain late yesterday and last night, which is great for gardens. And that's why we're here. So it's great to be back. We've got a terrific program for you today. Starting right up, I should tell you, the Garden Gurus TV series returns for its 21st birthday, for its 21st anniversary this weekend, this Saturday at 4:30 p.m. on Channel 9. And check your local guides just in case it's different in your area. I've got a terrific guest joining us a bit later on today's show. Peter Donegan, we've had him on before. He is that amazing Irish garden designer and television host who is actually coming to Australia. In fact, he's right here in Australia. It seems appropriate that on St. Patrick's Day we would be getting Peter on the show, but he is actually he's in Melbourne building his garden for the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, which we'll be featuring a bit later in the series. We've got some great prizes for you. This is really cool. We've got the Garden Express prize. It's a $50 gift voucher for the very best question. And that's really ramping things up, isn't it? $50 to spend at Garden Express. And you can literally do it after the show online, order it, have it delivered direct to your door in just in a short period of time. And as part of the Garden Gurus Live, we've also got an amazing gift pack. Troforte are joining us this series, and they've created a gift pack every week worth $250, packed full of all of their great products. It's a really good thing. We'll be giving that away as we go along, and we'll be revealing the code word for live for Troforte's Facebook page where you will go and enter the competition. And I'll tell you more about that a bit later on. But right now, let's find out what we've got coming up with regards to Garden Express's offer of the week.
Creating a bulb lasagna can sound a little odd and complicated, but it really isn't. Essentially, you're planting a mixture of flowering bulbs that will have a succession of blooms. And you're planting the bulbs in two or more layers, just like this. You'll need a decent sized pot that is also deep. To start with, add a few inches of premium potting mix, then plant your first layer. Now I am using three different bulbs. For the bottom layer, often you can use either the largest bulbs or either the later flowering ones that don't mind being planted a little deeper, just like tulips. Add some more soil and then add the next layer. For the middle, I'm using hyacinths as they're a beautiful fragrant flower and their blooms will come out in mid-spring, crossing over with the tulips. For the top layer, which I'll be using the smallest bulb, or sometimes you can even use the earliest flowering, I'm planting some grape hyacinths. Another tip to keep in mind when you're doing your layers is to allow enough space in between all those bulbs. So don't overly pack your planter. And the reason for this is all those bulbs that are further down still need to make their way up to the top. But if they do encounter another bulb, they'll simply just grow around it. So they should still come up to the top. I'll keep this container moist in a semi-shaded position, and in a few months' time, this will be a mixture of color. If you're interested in creating your own bulb lasagna, Garden Express has a special collection for just $20. Head on over to their website to discover more.
I love it. How good's that, hey? What a great idea. Bonnie's just a really, really clever garden lover and designer. And you know what she's done here is creating this bulb lasagna. Well, working with the guys from Garden Express, we've got some terrific collections for you. One of them is collection number one, I suppose. It's the muscari or the grape hyacinths, those beautiful little blue flowers that come up in the spring or sort of early summer, really. Hyacinths, Woodstock, there's three of those. There's 20 of the grape hyacinths, by the way. Hyacinths, Woodstock, which are the traditional hyacinths with the beautiful fragrant flowers. There's three of those and four Royal Virgin Tulips. Now, that would be the first collection. The second collection is Anemone Poppy Blue, gorgeous, 20 of those. Hyacinths Delft Blue by three. And Tulip, Isle de France, Ile de France. It's beautiful, four of those. Two different collections, unbelievable value. So it is the Spring Bulb Lasagna Collection from our friends at Garden Express, normally valued at $27.50, but only $20 for Garden Gurus viewers. It's 25% off the normal retail price. Now, remember, the thing with this is delivered direct to your door. Place your orders online. You can order 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they will deliver it direct to your door so you can create this little project later on. You'll see that clip on the weekend on the Garden Gurus. All right, let's get into your questions. I know that's what you've been hanging out for, and I've got to say thanks very much for the positive comment, Francis, about the beard, because Nige gave me a really hard time, I've got to tell you. But that's okay. I've got to keep him entertained. Mandy is from North Central Victoria. I'm wondering if you can advise me on my lawn. It's got an invading broadleaf grass, which really isn't welcome. Okay, Mandy, this is a really interesting thing. So you can use weed and feeds on broadleafs. You don't want to use the one for buffalo. You want to use the traditional weed and feed, and you can spray that over your traditional fine leaf grass, which will take out that broadleaf grass quite effectively. The other thing that is really, really effective is regular mowing. So if you're going to mow low and mow two or three times a week, you'll take out the broadleaf grass. And the reason is it doesn't have foliage on the surface, one smothering out the competing against your existing grass. But more importantly, it can't photosynthesize, so it's not getting energy from the sun, and you will find it starts to deteriorate. So you could probably, if you did three times a week for 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to take it out without using any chemical. But the truth of the matter is probably the easiest way to go is to use traditional weed and feed, and you can just hose that over the top. And you might need to do it two or three times, but again, that will take it out. Hopefully that helps. Now, I've got to remember to remind you, it's very important you tell me where you're from. And the reason I say that is because our climates are so dramatically different. For example, it's really been dry in northern New South Wales and Queensland in the last couple of months. Really since Christmas time, the rain sort of turned off for most of you, and you're now dealing with quite dry, warm conditions. And I know extremely humid in around Brisbane and further north. Whereas in the south, Melbourne, I was there just a few weeks ago, we're well and truly on our way into autumn conditions. And it's been quite moist and things are growing strongly and still look good, but change of season. And in Perth, we're not quite in autumn, but now we've had a little bit of rain, it's cooler over here. You telling me where you are helps me identify, one, what the climatic condition is that you're dealing with, and two, some of the plants that may or may not perform in your particular region. Joanne's a good example of sending through a photograph, but we're not quite sure where you're from. In this case, it doesn't matter too much, Joanne, because you've got a calathea here. This is an indoor plant, and you're concerned about its leaves rolling up. Now, interesting thing about this plant is it rolls its leaves up when it's not getting enough water. So it's almost 100% certain that you're going to need to make sure that you're getting more water into it. And I can see that you've got a layer of that fungus gnat product across the surface. Now, one of the downsides to that product is it's highly absorbent, and it takes the moisture out of the surface of the soil. And that may well be what's actually causing the problem here. So just be aware, when you do put it on, but just keep it a little bit on the, I suppose, thin side. You don't want it too thick.
it's too thick, it might suck moisture out and dry the soil out a little bit as well. Hopefully that helps, Joanne. And we are moving into some fairly good questions coming from all over the country now. So Glenn is on the Gold Coast. We've got raised garden beds about 80 centimetres high and they're about 1.6 metres long. We've got them to save our backs, but filling them is going to be costly. Do you have any suggestions on what we can do to, say, fill the bottom third of the beds? Now, they're for veggies. And it's a really good point in question. One of the things that I know that it may not sound like something that you necessarily want to do, but filling with gravel is a really important thing. And you can use different types of gravel. So you can use a bluestone gravel or granite gravel if you want. Crushed rock is a good option, but you can also head to your local hydroponic store. And I think even Bunnings sells this stuff. And it's big 80-litre bags of expanded clay. Now, it looks like a little round gravel pebble, if you like. It is absorbent and it's used in hydroponics, but it's a great filler. And what you can do is you can lay a few bags of that out into the base. In fact, you could almost do 50% of it. Put a layer of, say, weed mat over the top of that and then really good organic soil on top of that. And I would recommend for these raised garden beds, and I know it's a bit more expensive, but something as good as a really good quality potting mix will guarantee you the most amazing veggies, and that's really what you want to achieve. So hopefully that helps out. Now, Leah is in Brisbane. What can I give my mandevilla? Its leaves are yellow and have black spots. Well, the yellow and the black spots are probably two different things, but the yellow is definitely a nutrient deficiency. And this is where, you know, a complex fertilizer like Trofort AM is going to do the world of good. You probably want to use the one for those acid-loving plants. So the one that's designed for azaleas and camellias, etc. There's different blends of Troforte, I should mention. And that one has more iron in it. And what you're most likely lacking is iron or magnesium. Now, the black spots are probably a stress-related illness as a consequence. You have to understand that plants have a complex diet need just like us. And if we don't, for example, if we don't get enough vitamin C, in the old days, sailors would get scurvy. And that's why they were carrying citrus on their ships to try and avoid getting sick. Now, scurvy is not a virus or a bacteria as such. It's actually a disease caused through a lack of magnesium, of vitamin C, I should say. So in this particular case, I think it's a lack of magnesium that you've got in your mandevilla. So a complex fertilizer should really do the job with regards to sort of sorting it out. Now, Francis is from Shepparton. And is it too hot in Shepparton to be planting tulips? Well, that's a good question, Francis. I'm not sure how warm you are just there at the moment, but you do need cool nights. That's really what you want to be looking at. Typically, I would suggest that you'd be planting tulips at the end of March, ideally maybe the first or even second week of April. You should have placed your orders by now, and they should be getting delivered to you. But we're coming towards the end of the planting season, basically, once we get into the first or second week of April. Shepparton, I think you do get it quite cool at night, but the days, if they're hot, and there's a lot of 30-plus degree days. In fact, there's some 40-plus degree days across central New South Wales and Queensland, and that is exactly, you know, where we've got to be very careful what we do. So try not to put them in on those conditions. Michelle, you're in South Australia, and what would I suggest is the best soil mix for my fiddle leaf ficus, please? I'm glad you asked that particular question. It depends where you've got it. If you're going to have it outdoors, then a really nice organic high-quality potting mix is the key. And, you know, using something along the lines, I would suggest, of, the Osmocote Premium, the blue mix, really does make a great result outdoors. But if you're indoors, then you probably want to think about the Osmocote, the one in the grey bag for indoor plants. And that's because it doesn't use organics. And if it's not using organics in that, it's only using things like, instead of using compost, I should say, instead of using the indoor version, which is using cocoa peat, what you'll find is you won't get fungus gnats. So there'll be no little flies in your glass of Chardonnay because you don't have that sort of problem because they've got nothing to feed on. And then you don't need to go putting your fungus gnat barrier across the surface as well. Hopefully that answers your question. Jenny, I'm not sure where you're from, but you've got a Queensland bottle tree. And how long will it grow in a pot? I've had it for about 18 years and it's growing up and out, but the bottle shape is barely existent. Right, so Jenny, good point. What they tend to do when they are growing in a pot environment is they tend to stretch up. But when they're in the ground, they get their root system out. When that root system is established, you'll suddenly get this beautiful bulbous shape. Now, it really does need to be planted into the ground to achieve that. They can be treated a bit like a bonsai, and that is that you can trim the top, keep them contained in a pot, and they will start to sort of bulb out that bottle shape, but it does take quite a bit of time. Jennifer is in Sydney. We're all over the country today, which is fantastic. It's great to have you all joining us. Jennifer, your question is about Stephanotis. You've got yellowing leaves, and what does it need, please? And that really relates back to that previous comment I was talking about before. A good controlled-release fertiliser is going to help your Stephanotis a lot. So, again, going back to Troforte, some people are going to say, yeah, Troforte, but where do I find it? Well, by the way, you can get that in your local garden centre. All good independent garden centres carry it. Or if you're looking for the Troforte technology, you'll find it in PowerFeed in Bunnings stores. Now, it's not all the PowerFeed products, but it's in some PowerFeed products. Just look on the label. It says uses Troforte technology. That's going to be the go, Jennifer, for you in Sydney with your Stephanotis. But I would say to you that one thing that you could do straight away to get some nice greening is to use something like Thrive. Now, it's a liquid fertilizer from Yates, very high in nitrogen, and it has a good supply of iron and also magnesium, so those greening elements, and it's absorbed through the foliage as well. So if you're watering over the top, it'll be sucked in through the foliage and it should do a pretty good job for you. All right, let's go back to Queensland. We've got a lot going on in Queensland at the moment. In fact, the next few questions are from Queensland. Pat, you're asking questions for growing hibiscus in Queensland. Probably one of the best places in the country to grow it. Some of the great breeders are up there. In fact, there was a very sad loss here in Western Australia this week. Tess Passmore, who's Nev Passmore's mum, passed away at the grand old age of 101. Now, Tess's husband, Albert, was one of the great hibiscus breeders in Australia. In fact, Hawaiian hibiscus varieties. And some of his hibiscus are still found in places like the White House. So Queensland is a great place to grow them. WA is a great place to grow them. But the trick with them is... Oh, dear. Sorry about that. I'm in big trouble now. that was my phone. So some of the I suppose great places to grow them is in hot, dry, free draining soils. If you really want to get great results, then you should be feeding them on a regular basis. The big trick with them is actually mulching about this time of the year. So I would suggest that maybe look at something like even an organic animal mulch, something like sheep manure if you can get hold of it. Really good for hibiscus. They love that. And they do have quite a lot of surface roots. So this does them a lot of good as the weather starts to get a bit drier in places like Brisbane, etc. Speaking of Queensland, Donna is in Brisbane. You've got a fiddle leaf fig, only got one stem. Is there anything you can do to get more branches? Actually, this is my plant of the week, and I'm not meant to be talking about it till a bit later on, but let me just see if I can drag it over and I'll show you what I'm talking about. Here's a fiddle leaf fig. Right, and you can see it here, and you see that big stem there? That stem, find the right leaf to pull out of the way, that stem was the original stem. So it just had a single stem, and what we've done is we've just cut it. It's forced it to branch out at the bottom, and now that foliage is absolutely gorgeous. I do need to cut that stem off, but don't be scared to cut them back. If it's getting long and lanky, give it a prune, give it a feed. That's really important. These guys are really hungry. That lush green foliage that you can see here is a result of giving it good liquid feed on a regular basis and also that Troforte into the base, in around the base of the pot. So hopefully that helps. Now, Marie is in Hobart. Great to have our friends from Tassie joining us. And thank you. It's great to be back, Marie. She said it's good to see you guys back. Can you please suggest a plant that could grow tall in full sun along a fence line? And there's pipes underneath. Ooh. So we need shallow roots. It's a really big challenge. This is probably where you go for something like a Pittosporum that doesn't have, you know, a very, very intense root system because it's quite sort of fibrous and not too deep. There's a lot of different Pittosporums that you can go for, but something like James Sterling or one of the improved forms of that, which has kind of got that silver foliage and quite nice, that'll give you upright, you can plant them close together, they make a great screening plant. There's one suggestion. I'm sure there's others. I'll think about them as we go along. Lynn's in Claremont, and that's back here in Western Australia. Hello. Can you suggest a 30-centimetre ground cover under a crabapple tree? It won't be getting much sun, maybe 3 hours, but dappled. Something's green, lush, please. Now, honestly, in that kind of environment, and with crabapples in particular, you might want to go something really, really hardy, like one of the evergreen ivies. They tend to be something that will cover really nice and thick. If you've got lots of moisture, you could maybe go for something like the violas. They're really good, but pretty much everything else I'm thinking of is going to require some sunlight, and crabapples can block that out, so hopefully that helps. We are staying in WA for the moment, and we're joining, Rebecca is joining us, I should say, from Hilbert. I've got a native mulberry, it's nearly 3 years old. Can I expect it to fruit, and what can I do to prompt for it to grow? Well, it's going to fruit in the springtime for a start, spring, early summer. They tend to be quite early. 3 years old, it should be producing fruit by now. The native mulberry is quite lovely. The fruit is not large and it's not completely obvious. So you might want to be taking a bit of a look and seeing if you can spot it. Interestingly enough, we're working on a brand new series of the Garden Gurus for Singapore, for the Singapore market. And I was in a garden just recently where they were growing the Australian native mulberry, and it was just in flower in the tropics and producing fruit now, which is really bizarre. But that's what plants do in different environments, I suppose. Melissa, you are in Geelong. You've got limes and lemon trees. They've got scale and ants, and you can't get rid of it. Now, you're spraying white oil weekly, but the pests aren't leaving. What can you do to save them? Okay, this is a really significant problem for limes and lemons when the scale gets out of control. And the ants are actually probably the cause of them being quite quite resilient when it comes to what you're spraying with, because white oil should typically take out scales, as a general comment. But the ants will be moving the scales. They actually farm scale and they move it around the tree. Now, you can actually get the ants to go away by doing something very simple. And it's getting something like talcum powder. As long as it's not raining on a regular basis, put a bit of a talcum powder barrier around the base of the tree. Or alternatively, you can also use something like Vaseline. So you literally put Vaseline up and down the stem. The ants won't cross over that. That stops them going up the tree, stops them farming and protecting the scale. And then the scale is far more, I suppose, vulnerable to things like hoverflies and other predatory insects. And at the same time, when you do spray, you are actually going to have some significant effect, because the ants aren't moving them around or cleaning the oil off them. They're actually unable to get to them. So it's a twofold thing. Control the ants and then go back and maybe spray with some white oil again. Just remember, when you're spraying with white oil, you do have to spray up and down the stems and underneath the foliage. It's really important, and that'll really knock the scale around. A little bit of scale on citrus is not an unnatural thing. It's when it gets out of control. And I should say to you that what we know is that when pests become plague proportion pests, as a general comment, it's generally because the plants are unhealthy, which means that you probably need to be thinking about applying some fertilizers and improving the soil, so maybe mulching around the base of your citrus as well. And in the future, that should reduce the incidence of these insects coming along. Okay, we are rolling along really well at the moment, and we've got questions coming from all over the country. I've got one here from Denise in Warmbra. Warmbra is a coastal suburb south of Perth. It's right on the beach, and it's got very, very alkaline soils. She's asking, what's the best manure to add to my beach sand to plant my sweet pea seeds? And the answer to that is probably most of the manures you're going to find are in a situation where they're quite alkaline. Cow manure can be quite acidic, so maybe cow manure is probably the better option for you, but you are going to have to put a fair bit in and then mix it into the existing sand to make sure things are flowing as far as moisture and also nutrients flowing evenly through the soil. It will be effective for probably 6 to 8 months, and then you're going to find it's broken down and you can't see it anymore. And it's because the microbes have been breaking it down, turning into nutrients, and the plants have been taking it up. In this case, sweet peas will use a lot of energy in a short period of time. So what I would actually recommend you do is you grab yourself a couple of bags of this. It's a product called Soil Solver. It's a clay silt mixture. You put around about 7.5 kilos per square meter, dig it into the top 150, 200 mils of soil, mix it in thoroughly, then put your manure in, and then leave it for about 2 weeks, and then plant your sweet peas in. Traditionally, sweet peas need to be planted by Anzac Day, so just so that you you know your timing. That's usually the time, but right now is a good time to prep the soil. Okay, wow, we had a bit of a flurry of questions there, and we've got lots of cool, interesting stuff coming up for you further into the show. It is just about 9:30 here in the West. We have got a great interview coming up for you. This is Peter Donegan. He is an amazing garden designer in Ireland. I became very good friends with him well over a decade ago, and we tend to waffle a little bit, but here's a great interview we had with him. He's just arrived in Australia, and he's about to build an amazing garden at MIFGAS, the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show.
Okay. Well, look, it's great to be chatting with my mate, Peter Donegan, all the way over there in Ireland. And Peter, you have got one of the most enviable jobs on the planet, and that is designing spectacular gardens. And you get to do it for television in Ireland, and now you're going to do it for visitors to the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show in this year's MIFGAS event. Tell me, how's the garden going?
Garden or show garden building always, Trevor, is an interesting journey. And in this case, It is genuinely no different. I think anybody who's been involved in it will tell you that you have an idea in your head of this ultimate love story and how would I normally say it? You take a daydream, you turn it into an equation, and it only ever appears like a daydream to the visitors who go there to see this wonderful show. We have an excellent team by our side. We have an excellent group of suppliers in Melbourne, and you couldn't ask for more.
Terrific. Can you give us a bit of an insight as to what the garden's going to look like? Something to give us that sort of understanding of what's that vision that's in your head?
Well, the garden loosely is based upon being on a small island and looking back to the mainland and this idea that when you fall in love, which can be taken as a want to be in your homeland or the beau who is on somewhere that is somewhat unreachable. And we were on an island called Inishmore, which is off the west of Ireland. I have a relationship there with the Children's Hospital based in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful evening with the moon beating across the water. And we were just chatting, saying, like, what do you do when in the middle of the night you go, I need to be with her or I need to be there. And this idea came for, you know, you should turn this idea into a garden, but you can't do a rugged Irish landscape replicated in Melbourne at a flower show, which has got to be quintessentially beautiful. And so we came up with a contemporary version of it where it's one island at the end of a 20 by 10 meter space. It's almost like walking on water. And that became it. So it becomes a case of stepping stones, as I would call them, rectangle shaped pieces of in this case, blue stone rather than black limestone.
Yep.
Going across water, which has obviously dyed. So one, it almost appears seamless from a distance. Not all details done yet, But I think what we have is a beautiful modern take on it.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing it explained when you're over here. And obviously, Martin and his incredible team at Semkin Landscapes have actually built this. And it's very exciting. Obviously, MIFGAS isn't that far away now. The Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, end of March.
The show is 29th of March to the 3rd of April. I depart there on the 10th. I won't get into time zones just for a minute. But I arrive, I think it's the 11th of March, to much fanfare, I believe, or to none anyway. And I'll obviously be there for St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. So I'm looking forward to that. And show ends April 3rd.
Mate, just tell me, moving away from Mythgus, tell me about the weather at the moment, where you are. Tell us a little bit about the plants, etc., that look fantastic.
At the moment, but we're surrounded by mainly hedgerows, Crataegus monogyna or hawthorn, for those who are into their plants, and Fraxinus excelsior or ash. So the birds are just coming literally back in at this moment in time. You can hear the bird song just happen a little bit more so in the morning time around 5:30. The hawthorn is just about starting to pop. But as a landscape, the farming fields are just about to turn from one into the other. Grass growth is just starting to come back. You're starting to see daisies appearing in the lawn, and the odd dandelion as well, if I may use the more common language of it.
Mate, look, it's been an absolute pleasure catching up. I'm looking forward to actually seeing you in Ireland the next time I'm there, but I'll have the opportunity to see you at the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, which I can't wait. Take care. Thanks so much again for that insight into the garden. That's something that everybody wants to go and see. It's going to be an exciting build. Can't wait to see what happens.
Trevor, I'm at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Victoria on the 22nd. I'm doing a talk there with the Friends of the Royal Botanic Gardens of Victoria. So I come in
Moira Hall, of March.
Doing that. 22nd of March, yeah. Tickets are on sale. They're charging me out at $30, which my brother laughed at. And he said, who would pay to see you talk? I said, that's shocking. He said, Dad would have said exactly the same thing.
What a brother's for.
Insulting you correctly and then laughing at it afterwards, Trevor. That's exactly what they're for.
Hey, listen, I look forward to seeing you when you get here. Thanks so much for your time today.
Pleasure as always, my friend. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
I'd pay to go and see him talk. He's an amazing character and incredible knowledge. Actually, the more you talk with Peter, the more you'll learn. Now, he's got this amazing garden. It's in construction at the moment at Carlton Gardens, and it will be one of the, obviously, the feature gardens this year as far as the show gardens go. It's well worthwhile popping down, and Peter will be there on site for much of the time, happily chatting away. He's very good at the chat and sharing his knowledge and ideas and love of Ireland. And, of course, it is St. Patrick's Day. So to all of our Irish friends or those of you that have Irish blood in you somewhere there, happy St. Patrick's Day. Now, we're just going to go straight into my plant of the week whilst we're at it, because we've already talked twice about this particular plant. But on this week's show, this beautiful plant, which is taking over my office at the moment, the fiddleleaf fig, is being featured. Now, something to really look forward to with the Garden Gurus this season is we are in the process of actually filming a version of the Garden Gurus for Asia, for specifically Singapore. So we have set up a team up in Singapore. They're actually filming Singaporean gardens. Singapore, if you haven't been or if you don't know anything about it, it is the city in a garden. It is absolutely amazing. And we're showcasing some pretty incredible gardens. And this week, it's actually a hotel, part of the Park Royal collection, that is just the most incredible green space I think I've probably ever seen. It really is remarkable. And I'm talking about, within that, some of the plants that are highlighted, including fiddleleaf fig. You'll get to see how big this plant gets. They can be quite large, terrific in pots. They can be contained. They can do all sorts of things. But once you put them into the ground, you need to make sure you have a lot of space. Now, Shaylee is producing us today, and she has, I don't know, she's the sweetest person you'll ever come across, but she's become a producer. She's bossing me around saying, Trevor, we're running slightly behind schedule. Keep up. Fiddleleaf fig, absolutely fantastic plant, one of the most popular indoor plants in the world, but can be used outdoors quite effectively as well. Keep your questions coming in. If yours aren't looking too good, we'll give you some ideas on how to get the best results out of them. All right, keeping moving on, we'll go back to another video clip. We'll give you a bit of an insight as to what's coming up this week episode one of The Garden Gurus.
All sorts of things have been growing in my garden, even a bit of a beard, which Nigel's been giving me a hard time about.
Shakespeare once wrote, "Of all flowers, methinks rose is best," and methinks he might be right.
There's nothing I love more than on a sunny day than getting out into the garden and tackling some difficult tasks.
And we're back. There you go. It's a little sample of what's coming up. Actually, it's a great show. It really is a fantastic show. I was really happy with the very first episode we've got. And you'll see it nationally on Channel 9, 4:30 this Saturday. It's all happening. And, of course, for those of you that do miss it, you can always watch it on 9 Now or keep it out for replays, which are done on 9 Life several times the following week generally. Now, let's keep rolling along. There's a lot of questions coming through. We'll go straight to Queensland. What do I do to add to exciting sand, rocky soil? Oh, dear, to make a vegetable garden. Sounds like it's a sandy, rocky soil and you're trying to build something. Julie, organics, animal manures and compost. What I do at home, so I've got, when you look at my garden, you probably think, oh, what a lush garden. He's got amazing soil. My garden only has soil about that deep. So it's about the top of my block. It is 100, maybe 150 mil at the deepest point when it comes to the soil. And what I've done is I've used a combination of sand. It's basically to explain it's sitting on a rocky base. And then I've built up with sand. Then I've put a really good compost in there. And then I put sheep manure as a mulch over the top. And, of course, the most critical thing to the whole thing is always adding something that's going to activate those beneficial microbes. So I do use Troforte extensively across my edible gardens, and it's a really effective way to get some pretty amazing growth results and productivity out of edible plants. Let's keep going. Now, we started something with the fiddle leaf fig. Tony, not sure where you're from, Tony, but what should you feed your fiddle leaf fig? Well, definitely that Troforte product. It's very, very good. In fact, I might get one of the guys to go and grab one of the buckets, a small bucket, and share it with me, and I'll show you what I'm talking about because it really does the job. Now, this is for the indoor plants and patios, so you could probably use this, but there you go. That's a smaller size packet that you'll find in independent garden centres. Now, what makes it so good is that it has a very complex mix of micro and macronutrients, over 60 essential minerals to strong, healthy growth. More important is that it's also got these beneficial soil microbes. So when you've got an indoor plant, Tony, and you're trying to get some real growth out of it, you want to activate the microbes in the soil as well. It kind of reinvigorates old, tired potting mix. So that's what I would definitely be using. That's what I use at home. And you can see the results of the plants that we've got here. They're very, very happy. And this is a bit of a rough and tough office environment, actually. So if they can handle this, they can handle anything. That'll help you. Pat, we don't know where you're from. Makes it really hard to answer your question. But you've got a dwarf lemon with a beautiful, lush green leaves, but no fruit. Now, a few years ago, you used the regular citrus fertilizer. Feeding citrus can be very good to encourage strong growth, but interestingly enough, once they've basically started producing fruit crops, you only feed them just as they go into flower, basically, and then maybe in the middle of the actual production of the crop, you might give them a little bit more, but basically don't, you know, I wouldn't feed too much when it comes to citrus. I would reduce back. Certainly, as soon as it's finished fruiting, you could give it a feed. But what you want to do is you actually want to back water off and back nutrients off. And that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that you're probably giving it too much love. When a fruiting tree isn't happy, it'll tend to produce more flower and try and produce more fruit. And this is the natural instinct of reproduction, basically producing something so the next generation continues on. So it's a bit like a good husband. Treat them mean, keep them keen, Pat. Hopefully that helps. And Pat's just let us know she's from the Gold Coast. So even more so in your conditions, you do want to you can keep it a bit on the drier side. Don't feed it. It'll shock it into producing more fruit. heading back west, so one side of the country to the other, Megan's in Rockingham. Last winter was so wet that my lime died. Now, what can I add to the planting hole to enhance growing of new citrus? And two, what can I add to raised garden beds to help retain moisture? Started with great soil quality, but it's obviously sort of wearing down. Me and Megan's a good friend of ours. She's been so supportive of the Garden Gurus for many, many years and participated in several of our display gardens that we've built at different times as well. So it's great to have you join us. Megan, first question, I suppose, is if you're finding that it was too wet, you need to mound your soil up. So planting into a mounded soil, which is a bit unusual in WA. You would normally bowl your soil because you want water to run to the plant because we live in a dry climate. However, we have had a couple of very, very wet winters here, and it starts to cause problems sometimes if there's too much water going to the tree. So it could be that's the problem. What I would do is plant into a mound. When it comes to raised garden beds, it's the old tricks. It's organics, making sure organics are going into the soil. So again, manures, but more importantly, mix some of that clay in, so that kaolin clay. So I talked about soil solver before. Good example of how you can use that product and really improve moisture retention. And really what you're trying to do is create effectively a loam soil. And when you look at what loam's made up of, it's made up of clay particles, silt, and sands. And so bringing the clay element into a sandy soil, particularly soil solver, which has got silt in it, and then adding composts or manures into that is going to massively improve the soil and improve the results. And after that, all the moisture you apply, any extra nutrients you apply, will be held near the surface of the roots where the plant needs it, and that'll deliver you the very best results. Kay is from Hillside in Victoria. Hi, Kay. This is a good question, Kay. My weeping cherry suffered some heat stress a few weeks ago. You want to prune them, but you're unsure about how far you can cut them back. Can I help you? Really, really good question, because if you cut them back too hard just at the moment, you're going to impact your flowering come springtime. So in actual fact, you probably don't want to prune them back too far. The only things I would prune back is dead wood. And then probably just at the moment, it's just about too late to feed them to try and get any growth. So trim off the dead wood, leave the good healthy wood, and come springtime you'll get flowers. And then as soon as the flowering's finished, I would then give them a prune if you feel they need that prune. The only other thing I could think of right at the moment would be to apply seaweed extract. Sea salt is obviously a fantastic product that really helps plants that are stressed. Okay, moving right along. I'm conscious we've got 17 minutes to go. I want to get through as many questions as I can for you. Laura is in Gippsland. Got an avocado tree. You started growing it from seed. It's 60 centimetres tall. And it was actually in your green waste. Is it worth you keeping? If so, any tips for looking after it long term? Avocados require some space, some really good space. So make sure you've got lots of room for a tree. They will definitely fruit off being a seedling, of course, but sometimes it can take somewhere between 6 and 8 years. So be a little bit patient. And saying that, I know people that have had seedling avocados produce fruit within 2 years. The only other issue with any kind of fruit growing it from seed is that for the seed to be produced, you need a male and female. That's a mum and a dad tree. They can be different trees. And like all fruit, the fruit can vary dramatically. And it can be very good quality fruit, but it could be a poor quality fruit as well. And you will not know until it's actually grown. The safest way to go is, of course, to go for a selected cultivar. So a grafted tree is a good way to go. But look, you've got it. It's growing. Why not? Put it out in the garden, let it grow. Avocados are beautiful trees. Man, we've got so many people from Queensland joining us this week. Glenn up in the Gold Coast, what controlled release fertiliser would you suggest? I looked at Troforte, but became confused with the different types available, different names that seem to do the same thing. They definitely do different things. So there's quite a variation with regards to Troforte and what it does. What I would recommend you do is you pick the general Troforte. That's the one that's going to deliver the very best results. So it's the all-purpose, and for general plants, that's perfect. But if you've got roses or you've got azaleas and camellias and rhododendrons, then you probably want to pick that particular type. It really gets down to what you're growing. And all fertilisers tend to address that these days. You know, Osmocote is another fantastic fertilizer that's a controlled release that does a great job as well. Just doesn't have those microbes there that Treforte has. Let's head south. Again, another question from Hobart. Linda, hello. My rhododendron is sick again. Can you remind me of what to use? It doubled in size, but it's got brown spots and yellowing. It sounds to me like it's a combination of two things, Linda. If it's actually dying back, that can be a root rot fungus problem, and you treat it quite differently. But when you're talking about yellowing and black spots, you're probably talking about nutrition. You said that it's doubled in size since you last treated it. I would try and get those roots nice and healthy again by applying something like sea salt around the base, and then I would be feeding it with a comprehensive fertilizer. And we just talked about the fact you can get Troforte from your local garden centre that's actually designed specifically for that purpose. Cherie is in Victoria. Hi, Cherie. It's great to have you back with us. You've got a massive indoor fiddly fig. I understand they love strict watering regimes and love to be near a window. They do like those positions and they do like water. So I feel like I'm doing the right things. However, mine has lost more than half of its bottom leaves, but it's pumping out heaps of new leaves. I just don't get this plant. Cherie, look, you know, generally when they drop their bottom leaves, it's either because they're getting lots of shade over the top, so they don't need those leaves anymore to produce energy as a result of the manufacture of that through photosynthesis. And if they're putting a lot of growth on the top, they tend to be growing towards light. Don't be scared to pull, to cut them back, to pull them back down and keep them nice and compact and encourage more growth from the bottom. They do naturally grow tall because they're naturally a tree. Really important. Now, you know what? It's a really interesting question. So Jess, who is our production coordinator, who looks after the Garden Gurus, Jess is absolutely wonderful, and her brother Nick is even better. Now, he helps out with all sorts of shoots and everything else, and he sent us in a question. So, Nick, this one's for you. Your Empire Zoysia grass has made its way into the garden beds. What method of herbicide can I recommend to make its removal from beds easier? Interesting, Nick. Zoysia grass has got an amazing root system, really complex and deep, and once it gets established, it's hard to control. But what I would recommend you do, really simple, easy way to control it. You could use a total herbicide like Roundup if you're guaranteed you're not going to hit any other plants around the outside. However, if there is a bit of a risk that you're in that situation where you're going to come in contact with other plants, a very simple solution is a chemical. It's called Fusilade. And it only kills grasses. Now, for things like Zoysia grass and couch grass in garden beds or even Kikuyu in garden beds where you just can't pull it all out, the easiest solution for that is to spray this stuff over the top, and it only kills grasses. It will not affect any of your other plants. So that might be worthwhile looking into. It's an expensive chemical, so maybe it's worthwhile getting somebody like Jim's or one of those specialized lawn mowing companies that can look after you. Now, staying in Perth for a moment, this is a good mate of mine. Troy is in Thornley. Troy's got the most amazing tropical garden. In fact, his bromeliads are just mind-blowing. Mate, you should send us some photos and we'll pop them up and share them with our viewers. It's a great garden, very inspirational. He's asking for some ideas about tropical plants in Perth, and is Troforte a good fertiliser for it? I do grow a fair old mix of native and also exotic plant species, and it produces the most amazing results, particularly with those leafy green ones. Bananas in my garden went ballistic the moment I used Troforte, so I've got no hesitation at all in recommending it. And a lot of it gets down to it's about soil health. Things that are epiphytes, things like bromeliads that live in trees, not so sure about those. I tend to think that you probably want to try, if you're going to do anything, quite a watered down liquid fertilizer, but you probably already have that one sorted out, I would have thought. Maybe we can get some advice from you. Let's head to Port Kembla. Marie is in Port Kembla. When's a good time to prune a fig tree and beat borers infestation? So if you're getting infestations of borers in, so they're obviously boring bugs, insects, usually beetles, into the timber, into the trunk of trees, and it causes them to go into shock, and often they'll suddenly die. So that sudden death instance is often what happens. Pruning figs can be done any time of the year except for the coldest months of the year. You don't want to do it during the peak of the cool season. So warm season, great time. As far as treating borers and boring insects, as a general comment, you really need to do that when you're seeing signs of it. And usually the first sign of that is you'll see sap flow coming out of the trunks. There's several different ways to do it, but the best way to do it is to be using a systemic insecticide, and there are a number of them available. And the second most important thing is you should probably do it via injection. So you want to go to your local garden center and say, look, I need to get something to inject into my trees. So there are actually things that you can buy. It's an actual injection needle. I'm trying to think. What's the word I'm thinking of here?
Syringe.
That's what I'm thinking of. Thank you, Jess. And it's one of those things where you actually drill a hole into the tree. The syringe goes in. You crack the seal, and then it slowly injects. And it seals off around the outside and slowly sucks that through, moving it through the sap, and that will kill off those borers, those boring insects that cause those problems. So hopefully that helps. Jimmy is in Perth. Now, Jimmy's sounds like a very, very wise man. He's got an apartment and it gets late afternoon sun and heavy wind. What plants can I grow with height to fill the space in the balcony? Probably in that extreme environment, some of the best you'll ever get, Jimmy, things like bougainvilleas. They are fantastic. And you can get small, compact versions. You can get more upright versions. You don't want the really big forms, though. You want to make sure you're getting some of the dwarf ones. So there's a range of them called Bambino bougainvilleas, and they make the most amazing colour display all year round, require very little water. In fact, they get a little bit of dry shock, they'll just produce more flowers. Can't go wrong. Michelle is in South Australia. I've got another question about my teddy bear magnolia. It's quite big, and then some strong winds broke off the top. You've had to cut it off, and you're concerned that it won't grow from the main stem. It will, Michelle. It'll recover. As long as you've cut it clean, it'll really do the job. And I'd give it a feed, and it'll recover. It'll probably be a little bit more compact, which is not such a bad thing, because they do tend to grow up quite almost conical in their shape. Dylan's in Perth, and he's got a lawn that's dry. Here we go. It's not a uncommon problem. The trouble with dry lawns, whether you're in New South Wales or Queensland at the moment, where things are really drying out, the problem with it is getting the water back into it, because if it dries out and becomes hydrophobic, water will run in little channels down through the surface of the soil, but not evenly through the surface of the soil. This is where wetting agents really come into their own. So if you've got a wetting agent and you apply that over the top, now there's lots of different types. I tend to use liquids. It's my preference. So you can buy them in a liquid form, water them in with either a watering can or get one of those hose-on ones, saturate the soil, make sure it's actually bubbling. So you want to see bubbles occurring when you're actually, you know, almost frothing. And what it's doing is it's washing away the waxy coating around the outside of those dry pockets of soil, allowing moisture to come in. And those bubbles you're seeing is the air coming out of the soil as the moisture moves through it. So it's a good sign, but you've got to do it properly. Really important you apply wetting agents the right way. Throwing some granulated stuff down and not washing it in is going to do no good at all. So that's why I like liquids. Helen is in Perth. I propagated some roses at the end of last year. I thought I did a good job with watering and looking after them, but only one cutting has sprouted leaves. Foliage is looking healthy too, but the leaves have started dying off and I've got no sprouts since. Are they buggered? Well, that's a good question, Helen. Roses growing on their own rootstock, they will grow. They do require consistent moisture, really important. The reason we graft roses onto rootstocks is to encourage vigorous growth and to help them get through dry conditions or extreme conditions, because the rootstock tends to be a wild rose variety that's far more vigorous. Also helps with things like disease resistance. So growing from cutting, you can do it. The results can be really hit and miss, and this is what you're telling us here. You are a lot better wherever you can to grow varieties that are grafted, unless they are landscape roses, like something like flower carpet, which is a really good example of plants that are incredibly vigorous on their own root system and don't need to be grafted. Okay, staying in Perth, Jasmine is in Mundaring. Hello, I've got a couple of what looks like massive rats in my backyard. They go around digging little holes in my veggie patch. Will they hurt my veggies? I suspect those massive rats, if you're in Mundaring, are actually quenders or bandicoots. I don't think rats will generally not dig holes in your veggie garden. Quenders will absolutely do it. You do not want to do anything to affect them at all. They are a gift from Mother Nature. They are a beautiful animal. And what they're actually doing is they're not actually eating the roots as such. They're digging up in the soil and pulling out little grubs and eating those. So they're actually doing you a favor. I wouldn't do anything at all. Rats can be a big problem around, but I don't think that's what your particular issue is. All right. We are heading to northern Queensland. Okay. Mandy's telling us she's got an Epiphyllum oxypetalum. It was the plant from Crazy Rich Asians, but I've no idea how to look after it. How much sun does it need? It's best, it's a really beautiful, absolutely gorgeous plant, actually. Produces wonderful flowers, does best in a semi-shaded position, ideally grown in a pot as well. So if you had it in a pot under a tree, ideal. What you want to avoid is the late afternoon strong sun. That's probably where you don't want it to be exposed. So if you can get it so it gets morning sunlight and afternoon shade, perfect conditions. Hopefully that helps. Gary, you didn't tell us where you're from, but you planted grapevines 2 years ago and they've caught a disease. Now, the nursery advised to spray with a copper-based fungicide, but after spraying, all my grapes went black and died. I was wondering if you can help me with some advice. Gary, very, very common problem, and this is something that so many people with grapes are experiencing at the moment. So just want to say to you, what you've done is probably burnt the grapes by spraying copper. The nursery shouldn't have suggested a copper-based fungicide this time of the year. You should have gone for something like Mancozeb. What you are going to do if you want to get control of this disease is spray copper over the branches, over the stems, after you've pruned it when it's gone deciduous. You can, just as you get bud burst, give it another spray of copper-based sprays, like, you know, Bordeaux is the most common one, at the beginning of spring, at the beginning of the growing season. But after that, please don't go doing anything else with it, because the only thing you really want to spray is probably something like Mancozeb, which is going to help control some of the other fungal diseases that do occur. All right. Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. And there's nothing you can do with the grapes this time around, but there is something you can do for next season. Hopefully that helps. Now, we've got Tyson Sanders joined us. Tyson, it's great to have you back with us. Big supporter of this particular show. Love it. You're in Boronia in Victoria. Can you plant carrot seeds in the ground or plant them somewhere else? Can I give some tips and advice? Best grown in ground, Tyson. I'm not sure. You've never really told us what your soil type's like. But if it's a sandy, free-draining soil, they will do amazingly well. You do need to make sure that you cultivate the soil nice and deep. So you want to be 30, maybe even 60 centimetres deep with regards to the depth, because they're going to grow deep into the soil. So you've got to make sure it's free and very friable, what we call friable. So that little bit of blood and bone down over that soil just before you plant the seed, scratch it in, water it in, spread your seeds over the top, do it in nice long lines. And then as they start to grow, go through and just pick some of the odd ones out, thinning them out, allowing it to produce larger fruit, and they won't get all twisted and tangled into each other. Best bit of advice I've got. All right, been with this moment, I know. We've just about run out of time, but here's the big competition winners for today. The $50 gift card. How cool is that? Absolutely fantastic gift from, or prize from our friends at Garden Express. Big thanks to Rowan for backing us through the season. Every week we will have one of these. You can go shopping with Garden Express, buy your favourite, whatever it is you need, because they have everything, and get it delivered direct to your door. This goes to Glenn on the Gold Coast. Glenn, we've got some raised garden beds. This is what you said. You've got this issue with regards to filling them. It's going to be costly, and my recommendation was that you use an aggregate if you can, but probably the best one of the whole lot is that expanded clay that's used. So congratulations, Glenn. To claim your prize, all you're going to need to do is just privately message us on Facebook with your email address. It'll get sent through and then you can go shopping. Now, if you're wondering what the Troforte code word is, okay, this is interesting. I just need you to scroll down a little bit further so I can look at it. The code word, if you want to be in the running to win that amazing Troforte gift pack, I think it's worth $250. It's a fantastic deal. What you've got to do is you've got to go to the Troforte Facebook page. The code word is soil. There you go. It's up on the screen. So just use that and good luck, because that's a great prize and you'd be in with a pretty good chance to win. So hopefully you have a win. Well, we've run out of time. It's flowing this morning. It's great to be back. It's great to be answering your questions. It's great to be interacting and talking again as we are. Next week, we are going to join you at a slightly different time. And I want you to make a note of this, because I'm going to be on Norfolk Island. Norfolk Island is a wonderful part of the world, and I'll be filming an episode of Destination Australia, a new show that we've been doing. Norfolk is gorgeous. I hope I can show you a little bit of it whilst we're there, but I'll be there answering your questions, etc. So we're going to start an hour earlier, and so that's 8 a.m. on the West Coast, and on the East Coast, that'll have you at 11 a.m., and you'll need to check, because I know it obviously varies in South Australia, Queensland, possibly the Northern Territory. Sorry for not being right on the ball with that one. But anyway, if you use 8 a.m. on the West Coast and 11 a.m. on in Sydney and Melbourne, you know, you've got a pretty good idea. You can work out your time from there. Well, we've run out of time to answer your questions. We are back next week, so make sure you get them into us. Keep sending them through. It's really good. You can always jump on our website if you've got any urgent questions that you need answered, thegardengurus.tv. Check out our YouTube channel, thegardengurus.tv. And yeah, I think we've got the first live, not the first live show, but the first episode of the Garden Gurus Autumn series is kicking off tomorrow on Channel 9 at 4:30 p.m. Check your local guides just in case there's a variation in your area. But it's a great show. I think you'll love it. And tell me what you think of the amazing garden that I get to showcase in Singapore. I think you'll be blown away. Thanks for joining us again. I'm Trevor Cochrane. Happy gardening, everybody. Big thanks to the team here for producing it. We had a few little challenges this morning, but it got through, which is fantastic. Thanks for joining us. I look forward to seeing you again soon.